Up next is a daily devotional by Pastor Tim Dotson, pastor of JF Believers Church in Menominee, Wisconsin. Subscribe to our podcast by visiting burningdogradio.com and clicking on subscribe. Thanks for listening to Burning Dog Radio.
Matthew chapter 2. Ah, the legends and the misconceptions. The details of the birth of Christ, especially the story of the visiting magi, has for a millennia been warped to fit our idealistic storybook Disney mentality. The truth is no less Hollywood fabulous, just far more real. These wise men, or magi as the original language is rendered, were in reality from parts unknown. There is nothing concrete to lead us to understand that there were three of them, as there may have been possibly many more. Possibly they were from Babylon, which would have been very fitting as Babylon represents the spiritual world, quote unquote. The best of the world's intelligentsia on their knees before a child king, a living Messiah. So he began, and so it will all end, as every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. Being from Babylon, it's highly probable that these men knew of the prophet Daniel. They knew of his writings and the prophecies of the coming Messiah. They traveled a very great distance simply to worship this new king. The events of chapter 2, unlike our Christmas nativity scenes, probably happened months after Christ's birth. This is definitely supported for a number of scriptural and historical reasons. Number one, Joseph and Mary were living in a house, so says verse 11. Secondly, Jesus is referred to as a child, not an infant. Three, Herod murdered all the male children, 2 years old and under, it says in verse 16. And four, it would have been strange for Joseph and Mary to offer the sacrifice of the poor, a pair of turtle doves and pigeons, if the wise men had just given them gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Thus, the wise men must have arrived after that ritual sacrifice. Verse 1 says, Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of King Herod, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. So Jesus was born in Bethlehem. One must understand what a place Bethlehem was in the day of Christ's birth to really understand the impact of his birth. For it was a small town of no real consequence, just 5 miles south of Jerusalem. And to top it all off, he was born in a barn. Verse 3, When King Herod heard it, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Imagine these wise men traveling so very far, excited with the adrenaline of perhaps a lifetime of waiting and watching, only to arrive and find no one else waiting and no one else watching. Besides Herod, there were others who were troubled, some because this was not the great messianic entry that they had anticipated, some because they didn't want another king. In fact, they didn't want any king. It seemed that the people, the government, and religion as well, all preferred that he had not come. Such has always been the case and will be right up until his second coming, at which time their hearts will be exactly the same concerning the entrance of the Messiah. Verse 4 says, Gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he asked them where the Christ would be born. Because of his fear, Herod was naturally more curious than this inquiry. Magi from the east who had come looking for a new king? Certainly that would get Herod's attention. Verse 5 says, They said to him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is written through the prophet, You, Bethlehem, land of Judea, are in no way least among the princes of Judah, for out of you shall come a governor who shall shepherd my people Israel. Ah, the truth is in their heads, but not in their hearts. You see, they knew enough of prophecy to quote Micah 5:2. They knew it enough to be without excuse. They should have been watching. They should have been waiting for his coming, the people should have been looking for his arrival. And after all, they were only 5 miles from the Savior of the world, and yet they would not go to see for themselves. Then again, we know so much concerning the signs and times of his second coming, yet few of us are actually waiting and watching and looking in anticipation. We fail to do so for the same reasons as they did the first time. The prophets Micah and Isaiah were contemporaries. They both prophesied concerning the coming of Messiah. Verse 7. Then Herod secretly called the wise men and learned from them exactly what time the star appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may come and worship him also." In Herod's fear and thirst for power, he devises a plan now to rid himself of this possible danger. For Herod, you see, there was no cost too great, which he is about to prove in all of his horror and cruelty. Through a feigned alliance and a false heart, Herod moves now to see his own desires and his own will manifested. He failed, of course. That has not stopped countless others that have followed him from trying through false religiosity and insincere hearts to do the same thing. Herod failed to stop this Jesus. They all failed to stop Jesus. Herod was an Idumean, a descendant of Esau. Thus, Jacob and Esau's battle, ironically, continues many years later in the person of Herod. The spiritual battle, the carnal, the godly versus the worldly. So wise men sought him, rulers opposed him, and the religious ignored him. It's funny, some things never change. Verse 9 says, "They, having heard the king, went their way, and behold, the star, which they saw in the east, went before them until it came and stood over where the young child was." There are many theories as to how this whole star thing really worked, but theories are all they are. Generally, man's attempts to explain away the supernatural with some sort of semi-natural astrological occurrence. And that is a little hard to swallow as we read that the star they had previously seen reappears to lead them to the very house where the young Messiah lived. Now that is some natural occurrence. In truth, this can be nothing short of a supernatural miracle of God. Verse 10 says, "When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. They came to the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Opening their treasures, they offered to him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." You see, gold represented royalty. Frankincense represented priesthood. And myrrh, that represented death. They brought him gifts, but more importantly, they brought him their worship. This indeed was and is the greatest gift we can bring. Verse 12 says, "Being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they went back to their own country another way." God had already begun his supernatural protection and intervention in the life of Jesus. The Magi were warned not to return to Herod, but to depart another way. And this is not unusual, as no one who comes to meet Jesus leaves the same way as he came. Verse 13 goes on and says, "Now when they departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, 'Arise, take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt, and stay there until I tell you, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him.' So he arose, and he took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt. And what he was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.'" So you see, Joseph too was warned, and he goes to Egypt to protect Mary and Jesus from the hatred of Herod. It seemed obvious from the beginning that Jesus came to die. But Satan would not be the one to decide that time. It would be Jesus himself standing there in the garden that would say, "The hour is at hand, and my time has come." Verse 16 says, "Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked by the wise men, was exceedingly angry and sent out and killed all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all the surrounding countryside from 2 years old and under, according to the exact time which he had learned from the wise men. So this act of desperate cruelty is not a surprise, coming from a man who had his wife and three of his children executed out of paranoia. Verse 17, then that which was spoken of Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children. She wouldn't be comforted because they are no more. This is a quote from Jeremiah 31:15, where Rachel, many years prior, was weeping for the children taken into exile. Calamity is given new breath in the deaths of these chosen children. Verse 19, but when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Egypt, for those who sought the young child's life are dead. He arose and he took the young child and his mother, and he came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in the place of his father, Herod, he was afraid to go there. So being warned in another dream, he withdrew into the region of Galilee. And he came and lived in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. God supernaturally continues to protect and guide the earthly parents of this young Messiah, and he guides him finally to Nazareth. Nazareth was significant only in the fact that it was a rough and vile city. Such understanding was widespread and can be seen years later in Nathanael's remark concerning Christ when he said, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? This placement was more than prophetic and more than happenstance. He could have grown up in the finest homes in Jerusalem or Rome, but God chose to raise his son in a town very much like ours. Like every town, USA. No doubt part of his preparation for that which later would be said, quote, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin.
That was our daily devotions by Pastor Tim Dodson. For more information about Pastor Tim and JF Believers Church, visit jfbelievers.com.